Hello, everyone, and thanks so much for tuning into the KevCast. I'm your host, Kevin Winder, author of Getting Better When You Can't. This is a podcast that's designed to help you see beyond everything. I believe you'll find the content interesting, engaging, and even life-changing. Please check out my website at www.kevinwinder.com and be sure to sign up for my weekly newsletter entitled Winder's Windshield. Thanks so much for tuning in, and now on to the KevCast. Hello, everyone, and thanks so much for joining the KevCast. Welcome back to another episode, and I am so glad that you are with me. I'm Kevin Winder, your host, and we are here on Sunday morning broadcasting to you. And today we're going to begin a series that talks about heaven and hell. And I don't care who you are, what religious persuasion or experiences you've had, you have an opinion about heaven and hell, mostly hell. And we are going to get into that today. And the topic of our discussion is called Weeping and Gnashing of Teeth. The Weeping and Gnashing of Teeth. Now, if you're not familiar with that, then you will be by the time this is done. But like many of you, my faith was based upon the heaven and hell duality, at least from the time of my late childhood. Heaven was up there, and heaven was always reserved for only saved people. And hell, of course, is down there, and that's reserved for anyone who didn't believe in Jesus. And of course, the less I knew about Scripture, the more certain I was about that idea. So then something happened in my life that completely altered this framework for me. It's called the Bible. I began to read it. I began to study it. I learned the original language. And now I've read the Bible cover to cover more than 40 times. And some of the books of the Bible I've read easily more than 100 times. And with every reading of Scripture, my Sunday school faith has eroded slightly more and more and more. And what that means is that what I'm gaining from learning in the reading has undermined what I was always taught from church. And this might shock you, but most Christians, especially the ones you know, talk to you at the break room or whatever, most Christians that we know do not read their Bibles. And they claim that the Bible is the ultimate authority in their life. Yet only the minority of Christians actually take the time out of their day to study it, to learn it, and to be read by it, right? And to actually learn how the Bible applies to their life. Most just abdicate that part to the pastor and just say, well, if the pastor teaches me the Bible, then that should be good enough. Or if I have a radio station and they teach the Bible, that should be good enough. They don't read it for themselves, by and large. And as a pastor, I was always encouraging people. I was really more of a Bible salesman because I was trying to convince people that if you read it, it's going to change you. It certainly did for me. And so regardless of your view of the Bible, can I ask you to just withhold judgment on what I'm about to say until you've had a chance to check it out for yourself? And if you don't have any intention of really checking it out for yourself, then at least reserve judgment and see if I don't bring a pretty interesting case before you. Just don't let your certainty, no matter what side of the topic you're on, cause you to miss something here. Because the truth is you're not as certain as you probably think you are. And I'm not dogmatic on what I'm about to say. I'll reflect what I have learned and observed, and then I'm going to submit this to you for your consideration, right? Kind of like the old Fox News, I report, you decide. Now, this series will explore the metaphors and the idioms and the ways that Scripture describes heaven and hell. And seeing these things in a different context can really empower us to draw new conclusions. And can I just say we desperately need new ways of seeing things? So let's start with weeping and gnashing of teeth. The term weeping and gnashing of teeth is a vivid term. I mean, it's used exclusively by Jesus. Nobody else uses that term. And Matthew records it 6 times, and Luke records it once. And those are the only 2 gospels where it's found. In all but one example, the term of weeping and gnashing of teeth is used in a parable, which means it's a fiction story. It's a story that's used to draw out something, right? And it's always used to describe the kingdom of heaven. So it's used once in a prophetic context in Matthew 24, and that's kind of a short-term prophecy about what's going to happen in Jerusalem, which we saw in the destruction in AD 70. But when we get to this idiom that is Jesus is using, he's describing a place. So within the stories that he's telling about a place. And remember, each reference is a parable. Don't forget that. This is not a literal text. This is fictional text. It doesn't mean it's not drawing out a true point. It just means you can't look at it as though it's the same thing, okay? It's different kind of text. And a parable is a tool that Jesus used to help the people around him see something that they usually missed, something that was hard to see. And so Jesus is describing a place of sadness and ruin. And scholars agree that this is a reference to hell. And this makes perfect sense. You see, the word hell is Gehenna in the Greek term. And it's used 12 times in the New Testament. It's literally a place known by the locals as the Valley of Hinnom. And this was the city dump where the trash, dead carcasses, all kinds of things were burned just south of Jerusalem. And it's important to know that Gehenna, the word that we translate hell, is actually a geographical place just south of Jerusalem where they burned everything. And it's easy to, you know, get that. And we need to recognize who and what is there in this Valley of Hinnom in order to grasp the meaning of hell. You see, it's too easy to just import into the scripture Hollywood or Dante's vision of hell. So let's keep that in mind. You know, when you're reading the Bible, you want to do the best you can at interpreting it. And if you're just reading into it your own ideas about it, you're kind of not letting it teach you what it needs to teach you. See, Gehenna is the place of ultimate poverty. See, only the diseased, the dying, the criminals, and the total outcasts of society would live there because they were not allowed to live anywhere else. There's no way they could be in the temple system or nearby. They would be kicked out of all of their communities. They could only go there because there they might stand a chance of rummaging for scraps and barely eke out a survival. Now, wild dogs and animals would gravitate there due to the stench. And this is likely the reference to the gnashing of teeth. Now, you know, it's also referring to this desperation, a place of desperation. And starvation makes a person very desperate. And it really shows you how a nice being, a good dog or a good person, can lash out. And the gnashing of teeth symbolizes a deep anger, a frustration, a deep-seated pain, discontent, right? And it's a hopeless place. That's the idea. And this idiom reflects how someone here could not contain his or her anger. They would gnash their teeth and they would weep, right? This is where the bottom of society would go. And that is the point, precisely the point. And only by burning the heaps could they purify and reduce the amount of the rubbish and kind of contain the Valley of Hinnom. Thus, fire was going day and night. And you could look outside the city and you could see the flames and the smoke from the Valley of Hinnom. Now, is it any wonder that this cultural, this historical, this geographical place was used in the poetic language of Scripture to describe a place of suffering, to describe what they call the fiery furnace? Now ask yourself, what is the role of the fire? You see, in the context of Gehenna, the Valley of Hinnom, in the context of hell, it isn't to torment. The purpose of the fire is to purify. So who or what goes to this place? According to the stories, the place of weeping and gnashing of teeth is where the antagonists to the kingdom of heaven are sent. Remember, I said this is only found in parables. And parables are always stories to teach a person what the kingdom of heaven is like. And so within this story, there's always this antagonist, this opposite side. And the antagonist is that to the kingdom of heaven. And this is where they're sent. And so it's not one type of person that goes to hell. So my idea that only those who don't accept Jesus in their heart go to hell is completely foreign to what Scripture is teaching here. Did you hear that? Right? It talks about different kinds of people and social strata and other things all going to this place of weeping and gnashing of teeth. And it's where they are sent. It's where they are dragged, beaten, punished, put there, right? And so a misunderstanding of the kingdom of heaven will always lead to a jacked up view of hell. And antagonists are not merely unbelievers, as the church would say. They aren't infidels, as Islam would say. They aren't Gentiles, as the Jews would say. They aren't those who do bad things, as a moralist would say. It may not even be as Pat Benatar says, and where hell is for children. See, in each of the parables, that which goes to the place of weeping and gnashing of teeth is that which is false. You see, falseness goes to be burned. An antagonist of the kingdom is anything that's false, any falsehood at all. That is why gnashing, the place of weeping and gnashing of teeth, is the place of pride. Pride always stands against truth. And this principle is on display within each of Jesus' story. Now you kind of get a little picture of what Jesus is getting at. He's saying that the very worst that a person could ever be, the bottom of the heap, the most terrible thing a person could ever be, is proud. Essentially, Jesus is saying that the kingdom of heaven, which is, we're told through Scripture, is here, which is among us, which is within us, right? He's saying the kingdom of heaven is a place of expanding truth. It's a place where everything we know to be true today is only partially true tomorrow, because it's expanding, right? He says the kingdom is, you know, you're not going to be able to put it in an old wineskin, because if you do, you're going to blow it apart. You can't put it in an old framework. It's too big. And it's expanding, right? So pride can't enter such a place. Pride people are certain people, right? And as such, you know, they have to be purified by fire and humility and suffering. And isn't that exactly what the pride of our own hearts feels whenever it is being challenged? It feels threatened. It hates humility. It hates being on the bottom. It hates any kind of suffering. And until we suffer and give up our pride, we really cannot know what Jesus is describing as the kingdom of heaven. So anything false cannot be known by perfect truth. And this is where Thomas Merton says that the false self is the only thing that God knows nothing about, because he's perfect truth. He, she, perfect truth. And if you know only all that is true, then falseness can't exist. And if pride can't exist in this such a place, and it has to be purified, then it's obvious that all these things, these examples of people being sent to this place of weeping and gnashing of teeth, they are being sent to be purified because of what is existing in their life. pride in all that is false is utterly burned and consumed, leaving only that which is lasting and true. See, only a false life of severity and disconnection is Gehenna. And that's what remains for the proud. And wouldn't that be true if you looked at that in your life? Look at people who live false lives. Look at the people who live very, very proud lives that are afraid to ever admit to error or a mistake. Don't they live a life of severity and ultimate disconnection? Aren't they missing something deep and meaningful in life? Isn't that a living hell? You see, pride, it goes down only with a fight. It dies with much weeping and gnashing of teeth. Thus, hell is not a place of future torture, but a perfect description of the proving grounds for the proud here and now. And with this lens, I invite you to now go back and reread the parables of Matthew 8:12, Matthew 13, Matthew 22, Matthew 24, Matthew 25, Luke 13. Go back and check them out for yourself and see with a new set of lenses. Don't just put this into some kind of Dante's hell picture of hell down there and heaven up there. Think of it within the context of your daily living life and see what begins to emerge. Thanks so much for joining the KevCast, where we learn to see beyond everything. I hope this content has helped you, and I'd love to hear from you if you have any questions or comments or feedback. Until next time, I hope you have an awesome day, and I can't wait to have you come back real soon.